This episode is brought to you by Wix.com. I'm going to keep it real honest with you guys. I was struggling to build a website. I had went through different website developers, and I was just struggling. I was like, you know what? I got to do this thing myself. And I started looking at what my best options for building a website myself was, and it was Wix.com. It was crazy easy. The templates they give you are mobile-ready, mobile-friendly, and really easy to do, and I was able to create a smooth and beautiful website that was mobile first that you could check out. Now go to h4hustle.com and check it out. But for H4Hustle listeners, if you need to build a website and you're struggling with that, go to Wix.com. Go to h4hustle.com/Wix, or click in the link in the description, takes you there. And Wix, it's perfect and it's amazing. So if you're struggling to build a website, go to h4hustle.com/Wix. Hey Alexa, what's the definition of hustle?
To be aggressive, especially in business or other financial dealings.
You're listening to the H for Hustle podcast, designed to inspire future entrepreneurs to take the leap from working for someone else to pursue their passions and side hustles and turning them into full-fledged businesses. My name is Jerome Fenton. I'm a serial entrepreneur. Every week, I'll be speaking with an entrepreneur that has taken that leap. We'll be talking about the lessons they've learned and how they've turned their passions and side hustles into full-fledged businesses. H for Hustle Podcast, welcome back. Another illustrious episode up ahead. Guys, so first off, I want to say thank you so much for being here, for listening, for continuing to share and tell your friends and family about this podcast. Thank you guys so much. The best way to grow this podcast, guys, is with word of mouth, and you guys are doing it. So thank you so much. Also, make sure you guys go to h4hustle.com. Check out our blogs. You can listen to the podcast there. You can also check out our new sponsor, h4hustle/Wix. Definitely go check that out, guys. So on today's episode, I sit down with Billy Thorpe of Thorpe Creative. Now, Billy's story is really interesting because he was referring business to someone and he realized that he was giving them way more money than he was actually making a year. And he's like, whoa, I can do that. And he really started his business like that. And you know, Billy's story is very fascinating, and you start realizing that he's an entrepreneur in multiple facets, not just in one way, but in multiple different ways. And we also talk about how during the pandemic and the lockdown, he was able to pivot and make money during this time as an entrepreneur, and being able to be flexible and malleable and moving quickly to find an opportunity for himself. So I'm not going to tell you all about Billy's story. Let's get into the episode right now. Boom, 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 boom. H for Hustle Podcast, welcome back. We have another great guest. Today we have Billy Thorpe, the founder of Thorpe Creative. Welcome to the show, Billy.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. It's great to be on. I've watched your podcast, listened to it, so super excited to be a part of it.
Thank you so much, man. So if I were to say, what do you do for a living? What do you tell people?
I would open up my jacket and go, what do you need? What do you need? Yeah, you want this watch or this one? Well, the core of what I do is promotional items. And so we help nonprofits and public speakers and, you know, public figures build brands, build different streams of revenue. And so started screen printing business roughly 7 years ago. And so that's kind of the meat and potatoes of what I do. You know, COVID brought its own pains to my life back in March. And so our business kind of took this weird downturn. And then I started selling product on eBay and have done really well with that as well. So that's kind of the two things I've been doing. And for the third thing, I just launched a studio space to do podcast. So I've been in media for a long time. And, you know, my wife's like, you know, this is a good time for you to transition and do something different if you want to, besides the apparel business. So a little bit into that pivoting mode right now. So, but yeah, man, that's kind of the three things I do at this point.
So is the studio space specifically just for you, or you're renting out to like outside people?
Yeah, so the goal is to rent it out to outside people. So I consult some people with their podcasts right now, help them set up their studios, help them get their game plan together for their media. And really, it's like live streaming, yeah, podcasting, anything kind of media driven. So my friend owns a co-working spot and had an office come available. And he's like, hey, man, why don't you take it for 3 months and pilot this? I'll help you design it. He's a, you know, does really well with interior design. And so eventually this will all be nice and colorful and, you know, sound, yeah, panels and all the professional looking studio stuff. And yeah, our hope is to bring business owners in, entrepreneurs, to create their own podcast, or anybody that has a message, we want to help them get it out. So yeah, and that's everything we do is geared around that one thing. I want to help you get your message out. If it's on a t-shirt, if it's through a podcast, like I want to be that person for you. So
got it.
That's what we do.
Yeah. I've been in this Twitch studio, which I thought that was like super interesting, where it's like a gaming studio where they build just for gamers to come in and play, yeah, and be recorded. So that is definitely becoming a more and more prevalent thing, and you're very early, so that business might have a lot of legs very quickly.
Well, dude, in the Twitch world, man, just to get off on a rabbit trail, like I have a friend of mine I used to work with in the real estate business, and dude, her nephew makes like 100+. Like 100,000+ playing, mm-hmm, a game, yeah, on Twitch, and I'm, yeah, like, that is crazy. I'm not a gamer, but I'm good for him.
A kid that used to work for me, his name is D1 Mangret. He is a Twitch announcer. He makes like 90 grand a year announcing and just talking about crazy Mario while people are playing Mario Smash Brothers. He's like the announcer, yeah, talking back and forth, and ooh, he works directly for Twitch doing that. So it's like, this is his job, you know, so you never know. It's kind of crazy these days.
Got him with a banana right on the left front tire.
There you go, just like that.
I got to rethink this whole, yeah, business thing, man. What am I doing? I'm working too hard.
He's like Marv Albert for video games. It's crazy. So let's go back a little bit. How did this all start? Like, when did you get into media creation, making items, stuff like that?
Yeah, man. So, you know, the entrepreneur itch really started when I was a kid. My grandfather was or is still an entrepreneur, even though he's in his late 70s. And I just saw him always solving problems. We'd show up to places, and he owned a construction business, and he would, you know, ask the questions and listen and then give a solution, and then they would write him a check. And I thought, holy cow, this is great, you know? Mm-hmm. So all my life, even as a young person, I was always trying to figure out, like, how do I turn this into dollar bills? How do I make money? And so I went through high school and then went to college. Actually, in college was interesting because I was a part of this youth ministry, and I went to this like all this tech stuff, like graphic design and website development. It wasn't really like a college, but it was like a little startup, like internship almost.
But like full sale, like kind of like that.
Yeah, kind of like that, but like really like a microscopic full scale. Okay. And so, yeah, it was like one of the, you know, a couple guys had a great idea. I don't even know if it's still around, but did it change my life? So good, you know, that came out of it. And so anyway, while I was there, I kind of dabbled in t-shirts a little bit to raise money for youth groups. And so, mm-hmm, I had this idea of like, oh, if I can pay somebody to print a shirt, I can sell it at these youth groups and we can split the profit. And so I started doing that like in college and really kind of get that t-shirt itch. Well, then I, you know, got done with college, started working at this church, started doing all the media stuff. So websites, graphics, video, you know, produce the TV
all
show.
All the stuff that you learned from school, pretty much.
All
you just
All the stuff I learned from school. So I did that for like a decade. Well, on the side, like I said, I'm always interested in making extra money and, you know, have my own business. So on the side, I was creating designs and logos and graphics. And so the same question kept popping up. Can you put this on a t-shirt? Do you know anybody who can? And so I always sent them to this one person in town. He did our shirts for our youth group. And so we're like, you know, whatever, he does great. And so one day I walked in there and he's like, yeah, man, appreciate all this business. You know, you're sending me, you know, X amount of money per year in business. And I was like, wait a second, that's a lot of money. Like, that's a lot more money than I'm making. And so yeah, man. So I got really interested really fast about the screen printing industry. And so I watched YouTube videos after YouTube video after YouTube video. And there's a guy named Ryan, I don't know his last name, but Ryanette is his company. And but man, I use YouTube, you know, it's like we have all these resources around us. And a friend of mine once told me, he said, you're only as great as your resources or as good as your resources. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm better than, I was like, well, no, I guess I'm not better than them because that's how I learn. Yeah. So man, I just binge watch YouTube videos, like print shirts, how to make a screen, how the squeegee works. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it. And so I was watching all these videos, but this, I had this huge problem. I couldn't afford the equipment because it's probably about like $20,000-$25,000 for, you know, a cheap setup to do it right. You know, now you can go out to one of these craft stores and get a little screen or whatever. But to really do it the right way, it was going to be about a $20,000 investment. And I think I was making like $9 an hour at that time. So I'm like, how is this
not happening
for me? You know, like I make $100 a week or whatever after taxes, like I'm not buying that. And so anyway, then I got my grandfather had a heat press in his garage that he had there for years. And so I was like, hey, can I have that? And he's like, no, he's an entrepreneur. So he's like, no, you can't have it. You can buy it off of me for $100.
Got to give grandpa some credit.
Yeah, man. Like, he didn't even invest. I'm like, but can you invest in my business? He's like, no, it's $100 or get out of here. And I'm like, all right. So I pay him. And so I kind of get interested. And at the time, my now wife was my girlfriend. And so she was in school to become a graphic designer and develop video games and different things. And so she was like, yeah, I need to create something for school. So we should create a brand. And so we started down that road of creating a brand. And then, you know, her family caught wind of it. Well, someone in her family had passed away that owned a screen printing business. Oh. And so it was like an uncle or like a, you know, distant cousin or something like that. And so we drove a couple hours away to look at the screen printing equipment. And, you know, man, it was everything. It was screens. It's the press. It's the dryer, like a nice conveyor belt dryer. I mean, it was the whole works.
It would have literally put you in business.
It's everything you need. I mean, gotcha. Everything you need. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, dude, I know how much this is all worth new. And I can imagine what it's worth used. And so, you know, my father-in-law was like, are you interested in buying it? And I was like, I don't know. How much do you guys want for all this stuff? And they're like, you know, we'll take 9 for it. And I was like, yeah, 9's a really good price. Like, that's super fair. However, I'm way away from 9,000. Like, not even close. And they're like, oh, no, not 9,900. We just want all this junk out of our stores. Like, we don't know what it is. We don't know what to do with it. And dude, so I was still didn't have, once again, I made $100 a week, still didn't have.
So $900 was still a stretch.
Yeah, still a stretch. And so my father, or my now father-in-law, but then my girlfriend's dad was like, hey, if you really want this stuff, I'll loan you $900. If you think you make some money at it, then you pay me back. And 7 years later, still haven't paid him back.
definitely made more than 900 at this point. Oh,
definitely made more. But you know what? It's like, okay, just the interest. Okay, I'm taking care of your daughter. Leave me get out of here. I gave you a grandson. What more do you want? And so anyway, man, so we started down this journey, and the church I was working at had this warehouse, and they're like, there's one room, one little small room, maybe the size of the studio. And they're like, if you want to use it, just pay the additional electricity. Like, here's what it typically costs us per month. You just pay the difference in electricity. And I was like, okay, that's cool. You know, so they kind of invest, you know, I worked for them. So it's like, really wasn't in their best interest to let me go do this on my own. But they said, yeah, we'll do it. And man, I stayed up, I can't tell you, until 3-4 o'clock in the morning, a lot of times, sometimes even slept on that warehouse floor just to learn the screen printing process.
Got it.
And really within
the first, you were just learning and fail, like messing up shirts after shirts and product after product after product until you figured it out.
Yeah, dude. Once I finally got to the place where I could like even make a screen, like that's how difficult this was for me, because I, you know, I'm watching these videos and then trying to do it and then not really understanding the process. So just to make the screen, make the stencil, and then printing the shirts, like a whole nother, you know, battle. And man, so I mean, I spent so much time. And I remember the first screen I even made, and the first shirt I printed was for a friend of mine who owned a business, a retail store. And he's like, yeah, I'll order 10 shirts, dude. 10 shirts. You would have thought this guy called me and said, I'll order 1,000,000 shirts. I was telling everybody I knew, like, I just sold 10 shirts. It's going to take me 4 hours. I'm going to make no money.
No, it's listen, awesome. I understand that. That's the best feeling ever, though. Like, you think it's so big. Like, I remember my first cleaning client with my first company was $25 a week. It was nothing. We underpriced ourselves like crazy, but that feeling that I got this thing, yeah. You know? So I know that feeling you're talking about. And that's like,
yeah, man.
You can never catch that feeling back again. Once you've got it, you got it. Like, that's it.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, you know, when you start a new business and you do that first deal, it feels good, but yeah. It didn't feel like that very first check, you know, or that not even check, really just the very first commitment to say, yeah, I want you to do something for
it's
me.
Like, oh, it's almost like you believe in me, although I don't even believe in myself. Like, you believe in me. That's like the best thing.
Yeah, man. So we printed those shirts and they actually turned out pretty good. I couldn't afford to print one extra and keep it as a souvenir, which I should have. But I even think just to go buy those shirts, man, like, and this is the thing about being an entrepreneur, you know, doing it by the bootstraps, I guess, or whatever people say, like, just, it's like I had to go to one of those title loan places and got a loan against my title of my car.
Wow.
Just to buy the first stock of shirts to test print and to print, you know, the first few orders.
Those are a risky loan because if you don't pay that back, they come and get your car fast.
Dude, it's high interest. Anybody listening to this podcast, do not go do that. Yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, don't. There's so many more ways to make money and to find revenue now. Like, don't go put your mortgage, you know, your house up for mortgage. Don't go do any of that. If you can't, you know, whatever.
One of our past guests, she did that to buy her first property. She had like a Honda Civic and she put a title loan to get the cash to get her first property going. She's a real estate investor. Her name's Lisa Phillips. But yeah, so I know that, but it's a very risky thing when you look at it.
Yeah, I'm driving home like, God, I better sell some shirts. I'm gonna be walking on my bike.
How much did you ask for? Was it a lot of money or was it like decent?
No, man, I drove like a 92 Camry. I think I got like $700 or something. Got it.
And the interest rate on that, it was like $4,000 you're going to give them back.
Oh, dude, it was insane. Yeah, I think I ended up paying that loan back at like $1,300 and I paid it back fast too. Like, that was the weird part. It's like 40% interest per month. It was insane. That's even know. Yeah.
So once you got that going and you did your first deal and then you did that title loan, like, did business start rolling in or did you hit like a stagnant spot?
No, man. So what I did was I went out and told everybody I know. I knocked on every door, every person. And really, I wasn't even a screen printer at that point. Like, I'd done 10 shirts, actually took a couple jobs where I didn't even know how they, you know, that was one color print on a shirt. So that was easy. Yeah. I'm selling two color prints. I'm selling all this stuff. And I literally had no idea what I was doing. And so, but I just tell everybody. And so I quickly, you know, sold probably $10,000 worth of revenue within the first probably 6 weeks or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, so for a new startup business, it was amazing, but I didn't know what I was doing. And so I sold a bit, you know, then, and here's where it gets interesting. I sold this big job of hoodies and was so nervous about it. Didn't go through all the details with the customer. We got done, we printed them, we gave them to them, and they're like, hey, you forgot the phone number on the back. And I was like,
oh my God.
I was like, well, hold on a second. You didn't want the phone number. Like, here's the design you agreed on. And they're like, okay, yeah, you're right. So no big deal, but we'll pay for you to put the number on the back. Can you put the number on the back? And I'm like, dude, once you make a screen, like, you can't just go put the number on. Like, you can't just go line it back up. It's like, it doesn't work that way. And so I called a buddy of mine that I met in the screen printing world. And I said, dude, excuse me. I said, dude, I need you to try this. Like, you're way better at this than I am. Can you make it happen? And man, he did. He made it happen. And so from that point, I think this was probably, you know, 6 months into it, maybe even closer to a year into it when I got this job. Mm-hmm. And he knocked it out of the park. And so I was like, I'm going to start sending you more work, you know, cause I'm better sales guy than I am a screen printer.
Yeah.
And man, we've been kind of partner like that. And so I got all my stuff in storage now and I outsource all that stuff to him.
So you realize very early, like, the printing side was, you liked the business, but you didn't like the actual printing of it.
Yeah, dude, I can talk a big game, but I couldn't deliver. And so I had to find the right partnerships to deliver. I think, you know, if I could go back, and not to say that you have to start that way, because I think for me, my relationship with my contract printers is way better now because I understand the process. Mm-hmm. And I don't have all these false expectations. I don't send them all this ludicrous designs and all this weird stuff. And I understand what they go through. And so for me, it brings way more value. And I've had really long relationships with these vendors because I know what they go through.
Yeah.
And I know what it takes to make it happen.
Because it's almost like you're bilingual. You can speak two languages. You can understand their side and the fulfillment. And you also know how to set the expectation for the customer now so that you're not over-promising or selling a design that you know that's going to be really ridiculous to pull off. You almost be able to kind of find this sweet middle. So you can set the proper expectation for the customer base. That's
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, that's smart. You had good insight to say, you know what? I'm better a salesman than I am a printer. Let me find a partner, or let me partner up with this guy and figure out how to split revenue from there. So how do you sell off your equipment at that point? You're like, hey, dude, I got all this equipment. You could take it. What do you do then?
No, man, I still owe my father-in-law $900. So it's in his storage building. Now yeah. He's storing it. I owe him $900 and he's storing my crap for free. I love it. I'm taking this guy to the cleaners. No,
the price of taking care of your daughter.
I know, right? Yeah. Yeah, man. So that, you know, that's kind of the how I got started. I know that was a really long story.
No, it's not. It's actually perfect. So again, with that, what now, print on demand is a little bit different, right? So printeries, mm-hmm. local printeries are still there, but we have companies like Teespring, TeePublic, Canva, all these like print on demand companies. How do you compete with that, you know, being that they print on demand and also now that you're in that space and these guys are way bigger, way, way bigger marketing dollars. How do you compete?
Well, I think it all comes down to profit margins and what is your goal as a brand owner. And so once again, I work with a lot of brands and help people build brands. So I go to, a public speaker or an author and I say, hey, you're selling books, but imagine selling a book and a t-shirt, you know? So it's mm-hmm. like now you make maybe 2 or 3 times what you were going to that night because you have some other stuff to offer and you're really building a community. And if you think about t-shirts, it's like something that everybody wears and it's just marketing over and over and over and over and mm-hmm. over. And so not only from the marketing aspect of it, but just from the community building aspect, but I can go to that public speaker, that author and say, and we do print on demand. So we have relationships with companies. I can build you a website. I can fulfill all your orders, but you're going to make $5 a shirt. Or yeah. you can order 50 shirts or 24, 50, 36, whatever. And I can have you making $10 or $15 a shirt for the yeah. same amount of effort. But for some people, they have the capacity to fulfill those orders themselves. And some people, they don't. So it's really, I don't think it's competition. I think it's great. You get them started. And, you know, primarily my business is bulk. But if people get started on these online platforms, and then they go, wait a minute, I can make way more money if I go over here and buy 100 of these from Billy, then sure, they've done the hard work, they've built the brand, and then they come to me and really start making some cash, and then they think I'm like the best guy on the planet.
Got it, because they've done that upfront work for you already. They understand, they've seen returns on it. It's now for them to like really start making big profits off of it.
Yeah, man, because I mean, there's some, you know, now with COVID and everything, like all these t-shirt companies went to printing, you know, went to making masks. And so there's a little bit of a t-shirt shortage, you know, right now in the market. And so, you know, the prices went up a little bit, but it's still, man, there's a ton of margin. If you have the right audience, there's a ton of margin in apparel.
So how did you position the business after that? Did you, once you had your partnerships, did you then just become a salesman and just go out there and look for new business? Or how did you change, things up to create a different way of bringing in more income?
Yeah. So what I did, man, was really got into a network of people who are all kind of doing similar things. Mm-hmm. And so you start working for one person in that network and then they refer you. So 90% of my business, probably 98% of my business is referral business. So I'm not mm-hmm. spending any money on ad spend and, you know, really haven't even tried because I just have so much phone. The phone is coming, you know, incoming calls, you know, which is just a part of the nature of the network that I'm a part of and the niche audience I'm a part of. And if that's one thing I could say, I spent a lot of time early on, the first probably half of my business, trying to be everything to everybody. And so I was trying to help the brands. I was trying to help the retail stores. I was trying to help everybody create, you know, whatever they wanted. I was trying to do family, you know, get gatherings and all this stuff.
Got it.
And, but when I finally was like, I'm going to help nonprofits do this. And that became my message. Then that really started bringing people my way and people knew like this guy's focused on me. He's paying attention to me. He knows my industry. He knows what I'm trying to accomplish. So therefore I know he's got a great product and he's not trying to be everything to everybody.
That's such a great point because How did you realize that? Because a lot of early stage and a lot of the audience that listens to this gets caught in that trap. I know when I first started my cleaning business, we wanted to do residential, commercial. We wanted to do windows. We wanted to do carpets. We wanted to do everything, but we weren't very specific. When did you realize that? And once you realized that, how did you make that transition to focus on that crowd, the nonprofit crowd?
Man, I kind of realized that when I looked at my numbers one year and was like, who do I do the most business with? And then it was like, oh, nonprofits. I'm like, man, I'm trying to get away from these guys. I need to be trying to get closer with these guys. Mm. And, you know, nonprofits have their own set of limitations and depends on which one. And, you know, you deal with all kinds of, and I deal with mainly with churches. And so it's like, I might deal with like a rich church that has like a 30, you know, 3,000-4,000 people in it. I might deal with somebody that has 10 people. And so, you know, it's like, and really I could even probably niche down even more and just say, hey, I don't work with, you know, whatever I don't want to work with. And, you know, but I want to try to help everybody out. So once again, you can always niche down, but I think I realize like, hey, these are the people coming to me. They're making calls to me. So why am I trying to focus and going to get in all this other business? Like I should focus on these guys.
That's super smart. And that's a very good tip. Like go to the business, look at your books and see where your business is coming from. Cause that's what happened to us too. We realized most of our bulk of our business was coming from commercial carpets, residential carpets and commercial cleaning. So we just cut out everything else and just focused on the three areas where the most of the money is coming from. That's a very, very good tip. I know a lot of the listeners get caught in that trap, especially when you first start off. You want to make every product, everything, do everything for everyone, but you just end up burning yourself out doing that.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And we even did that with t-shirts. Like we were trying to go into magnets and stickers and like all this other stuff. And I'm like, you know, and we can do all that, right? We can do that, but it's not my primary focus. I focus primarily on the t-shirt. If I can get you to help build you a brand with a t-shirt, then we can add stuff to it, right?
Got
we can
it.
Add different streams of revenue. We can add hats and stickers and, you know, whatever, beanies. And we do, you know, some of those with some of our brands, but I want to go deep with my customer. I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to be replaceable. I want to have all their artwork on file. I want to have all the relationship. I want to brainstorm with them on the phone. I want to spend time with them because I want to have 100 customers. I don't want to need to have 1,000 customers. I want to have 100 that are producing 80% of my business.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my mentality with the t-shirt printing business that I'm doing. So
you raised a very good point. That 100, right? That's such a good concept, but a lot of people don't really understand that.
Mm-hmm.
So that 100 will generate so much business for you. But at what stage in your entrepreneurial journey did you realize that? Because that's not a thing that you pick up very early. How long before you actually got that?
Man, it was kind of, you know, I'm a lot about self-help. And so I'm always trying to research and develop myself and put myself in positions of, you know, being mentored by other people, even if it's people I'll never meet, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I've always, you know, been reading and watching, and I'm a big YouTube junkie. And that's how I learned how to do this business was YouTube. And so I'm always going back to the drawing board going, okay, how can I think differently? And so I hear a lot of people just talk about, you know, niches and the, you know, there's riches in the niches, you know? And so it's like, I started thinking this way just a couple of years ago, of how can I just dig down deep and really even really discover needs that people don't even know they have. And so sometimes you'll kind of unearth this thing that you didn't even know was there. They didn't even know was there in a different industry. And so a lot of times people in my business are going after the same industry, schools, baseball teams, soft, you know, all this big number stuff, but they forget about these one or two people that have giant audiences. And so that's kind of who we target. I don't know at what point exactly, but I just heard so many people say it. And then, you know, I know a big thing in content creation is like, if you can get 1,000 people to really become super fans, you can live off that revenue.
Yeah.
So it's not really about having, you know, Joe Rogan size audience. It's really about having an audience and a community that just really loves you and loves what you're doing and will support that. And so if you get 100 people that are ordering multiple products from you every year in bulk, like we have been, I think it's when you can really start making some money.
And then also that audience becomes a referral network within itself, because
absolutely.
You start doing one. It's like, who does your shirts? Oh, my guy, Billy. boom, and they just keep looping you into more and more. So before you know it, that 100 creates another 100 for you very quickly.
Yeah. And I will say this too, man, quality of product is something I realized probably about halfway through. I was trying to figure out what is going to separate me from the next person. And, you know, I was always trying to think, like, who do I want to be? What kind of t-shirt do I want to give somebody? And so one day I was sitting there thinking, like, what kind of t-shirt do I, I'm in a t-shirt. I mean, look, I'm in a t-shirt right now. I love t-shirts, always have, always will. Mm-hmm. And there's t-shirts that I will stand by my dryer and wait for that buzzer to go off so I can wear it. And I'm like, that's the t-shirt I want to put in people's hands.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if I can help you sell that one shirt one time, the next design, that customer is going to come back because they want that same quality product. They want that same quality shirt. And so, you know, if you're starting your business, if you're out there and you're just getting started, figure out how to be the best quality that you can be today. You know, when I first started podcasting, I had a, you know, just an old junky camera and a junky microphone, but it got me 50, 60 episodes until I could monetize that podcast and get a better camera or a better microphone. Yeah. And now I get a studio. And so it's like, don't be afraid, do the best you can with what you have, but be the best that you possibly can. And look for different ways, like look at what the market's doing. And everybody that was doing screen printing at that time was just, you know, they were afraid to sell a high-end shirt because they were afraid to print a high-end shirt because it was more risk for them.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I don't want to be like you guys. I want to sell something people want to wear. And we all have those shirts that we got in high school that sit in the bottom of our drawer, or our kids' school send home with them. And they're like, this shirt feels like cardboard. It's horrible. You know, but I'm over here printing a, you know, high quality tri-blend shirt that people are like, dude, this thing hugs me all day. I love it. So
yeah, it's like that American Apparel, like shirt, that like perfect organic cotton, 100%. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. And know your audience too. Cause you know, if you got, you know, no offense to anyone, but if you got a bunch of heavyweights and that's your audience, you don't want to put them in a fitted shirt and never come back. Like, make sure that shirt is good. Make sure it's thick. You know, yeah, it's exactly. Like, know your audience, like really do some, and ask those hard questions too, you know, about whatever it is. If you're helping people build apparel for their audience, what does your audience look like? You know, what are they, what's their habits?
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a super good point. And those questions, you, it takes time for you to get confident enough to start asking that, but that's a very, very good point. Because I remember that was a point where we were like, how could we best serve you? What would be the best for you? What are the best things? And then you start realizing people have those answers, but it takes a little bit of courage and confidence to start asking that. But I keep hearing you say, help brands. So how do you help these nonprofits become brands? Like, what's the thought process behind that? Or are you working with for-profit companies that are trying to build brands?
No, man, we have in the past helped people, you know, start brands or give them resources or whatever to go out and source product. But really for nonprofits, and like I said, I was a youth pastor, so I spent a lot of time at car washes raising money. I spent a lot of time selling, you know, Krispy Kreme donuts or whatever. And I was really like, dude, I don't want to do this, you know? And even after I started my screen printing business, I know I was taking this group of kids to a youth conference in Georgia and we needed to raise about 12-15 grand. And they're like, oh yeah, we're going to go do car washes. I'm like, nope, you're going to take this order sheet and you're going to take it to every person in your family. And you're going to show them a picture of the shirt and you're going to write their size down and you're going to take their money. And they're like, huh? I'm like, yeah, you're going to go sell t-shirts. And they're like, nobody's doing that. And I'm like, exactly. I know, that's what we're going to do. And so that's where we really first started that. And then, you know, the church I was a part of did another event. And so I just randomly printed some shirts for that event. And we went and people were like, yeah, I want one of the shirts. I'll buy one from you. And so that was kind of the birthing of that. And then, you know, like I said, I work with a lot of people who travel. And so this is why during COVID, my business kind of went,
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of risky when you work with people who are going after big audiences, especially in person. But, you know, when you can help people add, you know, $40, $50, $60, $100,000 in revenue to their ministry through people buying product like this, it really works out for them.
That's a huge take. What do you think it is about t-shirts? Like, you know, there's skate brands who sell t-shirts. The Gap sells t-shirts. Like, you go in Target, there's a Marvel printed t-shirt. There's a whole bunch of t-shirts.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about t-shirt that's continuously keeps on going like that?
One, they're easy, right? They're easy. They're really, in the big scheme of things, cheap. You know, it's like, you know, if you're going to be a car salesman, like, you better have some money to buy that car and sell it. But, you know, you can get a t-shirt for, you know, anywhere from like probably $5-6 to $9-10 for a nice one, and you can go resell it for $25.
Yeah.
So it's like the profit margin is huge. It's easy. It's an easy sell, and it's an easy, you know, it's easy. It's easy to store, easy to ship.
Yeah.
You know, if I was going to do one product and never sell another product again, it would probably be some kind of a snapback hat. Just because there's no sizing. So it's a little bit easier. If I was going to build like one brand, like whatever, I'd build something universally fit. And so I've done that kind of through COVID. Like our business took this big hit, and I looked back, I owned this tubular bandana company. So I sold them as fishing mask or fishing bandanas that people wear around their neck. And so about 4 years ago, and that business didn't do well. It didn't, you know, we were in 8-9 retail stores.
Are you talking about the one that's almost like a scarf like this and you pull it up over your face?
Yep, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And you can wear it like 30 different ways. I think it's called a Buff. That's the original brand.
Okay.
That was on like Survivor or whatever. And so anyway, so I was like, man, I sold that business to a friend of mine and I had nothing to do with it. Well, when COVID, you know, came to town, as I like to say, a kayak company I used to do business with calls me. So I did, we sold everyone we had. Like we've had these things on the shelf for years. We sold like 25 of them. We need as many as you can get us. And I was like, all right. So I went back to my buddy I sold the company to, and he's like, no, man, I'm out. I don't want to do anything with that business. You know, I got my, he owns a media business, does video, promotional videos and that kind of thing. And so I was like, all right, dude, whatever. I don't have anything going on. I haven't sold a t-shirt in a month. So I'll go back to that manufacturer and check it out. And so I did that, sold, I think somewhere between 7,500 of those things on eBay.
Wow.
Since March.
With
since
no
April.
Printing on it, just bare nothing.
Just blank. Now they do have some ones that are stock printed that I have, purchase and bought, and I've printed a couple custom ones I've sold pretty well. But yeah, man, I went the cheapest route that I could possibly go. I source them from a company in China and get them in about 3 to 5 days and sell them on eBay all day long.
Wow. So that was like how you were able to get through the COVID patch, because granted your business is so in person and so
Man, and you know, and COVID opened up a lot of opportunity for me to just think and really kind of get back to the roots of things, and that's kind of how I got back into media and doing, you know, really doing more podcasting. I started a fishing podcast over a year and a half ago, and then started another podcast right during COVID that has to do with fishing. Started my business podcast like a little bit before that, but yeah, man, it's really given me enough window of time and some finances to reinvest into what I really want to do. And so it kind of took COVID going, hey, slow down and look at what you really want to do. And so, yeah, man, it's been good. It's been a weird season. And there was about 30 days I didn't do any business. And I was like freaking out. I'm like, dude, here goes 7 years of work. And I'm not really like that kind of work. I'm not doing advertising. I'm going, hey, here's the money I want to make every year. How do I do that? What do I need to make that happen? And I backwards engineer it to do that. And I think a lot of times people go, I want to make $1 million. Well, go ahead and do the math of what $1 million looks like on a break it down every day at like $2,700 or whatever it is per day.
Yeah.
And just trying to make $2,700 a month, then worry about $2,700 a day.
I always try to tell people, like, let's just scale. If you want to do $1 million, let's scale it down to 100 grand your first year. That's $8,000, $8,000 and change a month. All right, how much is that a day? And let's see if you can create the daily schedule to get to that. If you can create that habit of making 100 grand, all you have to do is just 10x that habit and there goes $1 million. But you got to create the habit first.
Yeah, and if you're working at 9 to 5 that you hate, it's like, okay, can you replace that first? That's the first question. Like, don't try to go make $1 million. Like, sure, go try to make $1 million, but that's going to be way impossible. But, you know, like, make those milestones. And then when you're making over 100,000, you're going to be like, holy smokes, this is enough. Like, this is good. Like, you know, and it's really just like your lifestyle. I mean, I won't get into lifestyle stuff, but scale back on those $8 coffees 3 times a day and you'll be all right.
go get the Keurig, pop it in there yourself.
As Gary Vaynerchuk says, go live with your mom and dad if you can.
Yeah, in the basement, figure it out. So how has entrepreneurship, being an entrepreneur, help impact and change your life?
Man, so, you know, I always kind of joke around because people ask me this question a lot and I'm like, oh yeah. Cause my neighbor jokes me. He goes, oh yeah, dude, I see you work hard. You walk to the mailbox and grab checks out of there. I'm like, yeah, dude, that's really what I do. It's so hard. And so, I'm like, but I really work 80 hours. So I don't have to work 40 for somebody else. But yeah. It really has, man. It's given me enough free time to, you know, we got a young child, a 2-year-old. And I never really had my parents at home a ton. Like my dad was always working a lot and, you know, I never really got to spend that super quality time that I wish I had with my parents. And so it's a real blessing for me to be able to be at home. And my wife and I kind of split days right now. We, you know, maybe after the new year, we'll do babysitter again, but it's really, dude, that babysitter, man, if somebody can start a babysitter business that people actually come to work, that's the money. Cause I'd pay you a lot. Cause we had 3 babysitters in like 4 months. It's ridiculous. But anyway.
Yeah. So, no, even daycares are, if they're good, they're expensive.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. And so, but dude, it's been good, man. It's been good to be there. And, you know, the older I get, the more I realize, some of the stuff when I was 20 and 30, you know, even in my 20s, I'm in my, you know, 30s now, but in my 20s, I'm like, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. And so, it gives me time to process those things, to be creative, to do what I want to do, to help other people. And, you know, and I have, even through the 7 years, there's been times where I might have to go work for somebody else, might have to do some sales consulting, might have to go in and do into somebody's office to make, ends meet, so to speak. But once again, it gives me the free time to do that. So yeah, man, I don't know. It's life changing, but it's not easy. And I never want to sell, hey, entrepreneurship is easy. You should quit everything you're doing to do it. I think you really have to have that drive on the inside of you. And really a desire. I don't know about you, man, but I've desired to make a difference in the world through my own processes for a really long time, ever since I can remember.
I mean, and it's one of those things too. It's like, it's in you. Like it's almost like, even if you have to take a detour for a second and go do some sales consulting or whatever it is, it's in you. It's like, you want to bring something to the world. And I really believe ultimately, I think everybody's like that. It's just that society has created this comfort zone that, you know, that you no longer feel like you have to go and do that. You could just work for somebody, get a check and kind of check out at the end of the day, you know? So,
and dude, I think this year, like, proved that wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and even though, and here's the thing, man, even though, and this is what I love about entrepreneurship too, it's, I've created 2 to 3, 4 streams of revenue my wife and I have into our home. So, you know, it's kind of like, if you get fired, if you work for somebody and they're like, you're finished. Like, you don't have 2 or 3 other things to kind of lean on for a minute and grow. So I think that's another thing I love about entrepreneurship. It gives you that opportunity to
create.
To create and really create and pivot quickly. And so, you know, if we weren't able to do that, if I was working a 9-to-5 waiting on my fate to happen when COVID came, I would have never been able to build this other online e-commerce business. So,
you had to pivot really fast and you did it, you know, but your brain was at that space, was like, your first option wasn't like, let me go get another job. It was like, how the hell can I get out of this situation?
Exactly.
And what can I sell to get me out of this? And that's like, that's the mindset that you have to have. You know, like a friend of mine, he had a catering company, COVID happened, no catering, no events. He just like, all right, doing a ghost kitchen. He turned his kitchen, his house kitchen into, and he just put himself on Uber Eats and DoorDash and all those things. And he's cooking out of his house and people are ordering. So, you know, so you could, you know, he just had to create another rate. And now he's like, man, I'm just going to get a commercial kitchen and keep doing that. And when, cause he kept his menu very, very simple. And when a catering comes back, he's now has 2 streams of revenue. So, you know, it's one of those things that you just have to kind of just keep on creating. What would you tell somebody who's sitting on the sidelines right now? They're dying a slow death. They're in that cubicle. They're listening to this in their headphones, right? What advice would you tell that person who's dying a slow death and they want to quit? They want to go somewhere else. What advice would you give them?
I would say this, man. I would say, go into your garage, find all the crap that you don't use, and sell it on eBay or Facebook Marketplace and just make a few $1,000 and feel good about yourself. And you'll be like, it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the first things I ever did was started selling stuff on eBay. Worked at a retail shop right after school, selling cell phones. People come in with Blackberries all day long, broken Blackberries. And I would be like, oh, hey, you want to sell that to me or give it to me? They're like, sure, you can have it. It's a piece of crap. And I'd go home. I'd spend $5 on the replacement parts. And I would sell them on eBay for $300 or $400.
Yeah.
And I was 20 years old and I was working a job where I made 30 grand. And then I was like making as much on the side selling these phones. And so I think it's like, do something that is low hanging fruit. Like you might have this giant vision, but do something small to get a small victory and then do it again and again and again. And maybe you don't want to sell stuff on eBay or Facebook Marketplace or whatever, but just give yourself the confidence that, hey, if I put my hand to something, and it can grow. And so I think that's what a lot of people don't do is they don't start. They have giant ideas that are just dang near impossible for anybody. And they don't have the resources or the money to do it. And so it's like, don't try to do it when you're out of debt. Don't try to do it when you retire. Like start something right now. If you want to start that podcast, go spend $60 on a USB microphone and start that podcast. And if you don't, if you don't have $60, go to your garage, sell your AirPods, sell your phone case, do whatever you have to do to figure that out. My wife told me that I wanted some AirPods. She's like, well, you're gonna have to sell some stuff. I went to my garage and sold $1,000 worth of stuff.
Then you're like, I don't need those AirPods anymore.
No, I bought the AirPods too. And the, like something like a couple microphones or whatever else I wanted. You know, it's like, dude, just go out there and just make, you know, if you want to be, just go out and figure out one part of the process. And so, and I think that's the thing, and get in front of the bigger audiences. Like if you have a product idea, especially in t-shirts or whatever, don't go spend all this money and do a Spotify or a Shopify store and all this stuff. Like go take your t-shirt idea, mock it up, put it on eBay or put it on eBay. If it sells, figure out how to get it direct to garment printed from custom ink or whatever. It might cost you $30. You might sell it for $35. You might not make any money, but just do it so you can see if you can make it work or not. And that's the thing.
That's such good advice. Cause I was just with my goddaughter and she was like, you know, she's 12 and she's like, in a couple of years I can get a summer job. I was like, you don't need a summer job. Like you got a phone. And she was like, what do you mean? So we went to the dollar store and I told her, I was like, there's something called retail arbitrage. You find something that they're selling in here for a dollar and then you see where it's selling online. And we actually found these Matchbox toys that are selling on eBay. They're selling in the dollar store for a dollar, but on eBay, they're selling for $17, $16. I was like, all right, cool. I'll front you $10. Right, you buy 10 of these, you sell them on eBay, and then when you make your $10 back, you give it back, you give me back my $10 investment. And she was like, okay. And she was like, she called me like 2 days later, like, one of them sold already. I can't believe this sold. I was like, I told you, this is how it works so quick. So, that's such a good point. Like, start with small victories and then build on top of the small victory. So, that's very solid.
And that retail arbitrage thing is real, man. I do that for fun on the weekends.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes if I'm bored or, you know, my wife is like, hey, get out of my hair. I go, like, all right, I'm going to go to the clearance aisle at Walmart. And I did this. I bought a bunch of these fire logs. And for $4 each, I think I bought like 5 or 10 of them. I can't remember. And my wife was so mad. These things were in the garage all summer long. But I bought them in the spring when no one was buying them. And I just stacked them in my garage. They're $4 each. I sold them for $30 a piece on eBay the next fall.
Wow.
And so for me, man, it's like even if you're just looking for an extra income, if you don't want to be a giant entrepreneur, just like a little extra income, man. There's so many ways to make a buck out there.
I do that, but I do it in reverse. So I do, this is like, so once a month in my neighborhood, they do like where you can throw out like all the big garbage. Like you could throw out stuff. I'll just like, oh, this furniture looks nice. This chair, I literally take a picture of it outside, put it on Facebook Marketplace, pick it up, bring it in my apartment, throw it on the balcony, and someone will come and get it for like $30, $40. And I'm like, no money in and $40 made. And I do that just to like keep myself sharp. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah. I could still make something out of nothing. You got it.
Yeah. I do. I mean, same thing. My neighbor had a lawnmower. It didn't work. I pushed it to my house, sold it for $30.
Yeah.
Like, it was like free. It's like, free. It's like so much stuff out there, man, that you can flip and make bucks. So, that's what we do, man. That's that entrepreneur mindset.
And, you know, I tell everybody my first like 17 episodes of my podcast was through my phone. I bought a cheap lavalier mic. And that can be pinned onto somebody, and I just plugged it into my phone. We had a conversation, and obviously I had to punch up the audio and do a lot of things to it, but
yeah,
you could start off very, very, very low tech and then build yourself and build your audience that way.
Absolutely.
So, such a great piece of advice. Thank you so much for that. So now your podcast, you said you went into more creative. You still have the media stuff going, I mean, the printing mm-hmm. stuff going on. But what made you move into the creative side? It was just something you wanted to tap back into, or you saw a new wave of where things are going?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of both. I produced some TV shows and some things like that back in back when I worked for the ministry I worked for. And so okay. I kind of missed that. Like I was kind of like, man, I do kind of miss that. And so I started creating a fishing podcast, and then I started creating my business podcast. I was interviewing business owners and entrepreneurs, just kind of similar to yours, just trying to figure out like, you know, where did you come from? Where are you going? Like, mm-hmm. can you help somebody else? And so I kind of got back into it by creating those two podcasts. And then a friend of mine owns a fishing company that does like a fishing newspaper. And so, you know, same thing with everybody else. His business changed in March, just like everyone else. And he's like, man, I got to do something, you know, online. I'm like, let's do a podcast together, man. Who cares? So we started doing that, and we monetized it super quick within like 6 episodes. Of course, he's, you know, built a big, you know, a nice, I'm not gonna say a giant brand, but a nice name in the community. And that's another way, man. Don't think you have to recreate the wheel. Go find somebody who's doing something and figure out how to help them do it and make money that way. And so, So I monetized that one pretty quick. And then I was like, you know, somebody else asked me like, man, you do such a good job. Can you help me? And I was like, sure, I can help you. They're like, well, how much? I'm like, I don't know.
I didn't even think this was a business.
I'm like, $2,500. I can help you get started, and that you buy all the equipment. I'll just tell you how to put it together. And they're like, sure, let's do it. And I'm like, what? What did you say? And so
you're like, damn, I underpriced myself.
I know. I was like, I should have said 5. This is ridiculous.
That's actually the going rate these days that people are doing that for.
Yeah, right. And so anyway, man. And then once again, my friend here that owns this spot was like super generous, and you know, he's always helping people start businesses, and you know, so he's like, hey, man, you use the space, pilot this idea. If it works, you can rent it. If it doesn't work, you know, who cares? It doesn't matter. So, yeah, man. So we're not even really launched this yet, but yeah. So if people wanted to, you know, I do some stuff on my business podcast. I'm like, you know, one thing is consistency in business. So I've been doing these other ones consistent, but that one I haven't. So,
yeah.
But anyway, it's just a Thorpe Creative podcast. You can go check it out. Now I feel obligated to make some more content for that one.
I'm going to put the link in the description, and then I'm going to put your Instagram. So if they like it, just hit them up. So I want more.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Keep me accountable. I'll be here.
So one last question, and this is, you know, I kind of actually two more questions. How do you deal with failure? A lot of the audience that's listening to this, they don't get started because they are afraid of failing. I tell everyone, entrepreneurship is failure. Like, that's what it is. Like, entrepreneur equals failure. That's what it is. But how do you deal with that? And, you know, what advice can you give someone who's scared of taking a chance or just scared of failure in general?
Yeah, man, you know, this was my big thing too when I first started. And I've always been kind of a forerunner for my friend groups or whatever. And so people are always like, oh man, you're the craziest guy. You'll just go do whatever. And I really don't, because it's not really, in my mind, it's not a risk, because I've evaluated so many things before mm-hmm. I make that decision.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think really it's the fear of like, you didn't make the right assessments, but just be confident in your assessments, be confident in your evaluations. And if there's value to that and you've tested the market in some way, and here's the thing I want to tell people too, it's like, so how I deal with fear is I just know it's going to happen. I just know I'm going to fail. Like, it doesn't matter. I may not fail and lose my business, but I'm going to fail in some way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there's a lot of t-shirt companies that are prospering a whole lot more since COVID because they took chance. You know, I got a friend in Texas who created this whole other system of business, and he even tried to get me to do it. I was like, nope, I think that's a dumb idea. I'm not doing it. And then now he's making money hand over fist. And I'm like, I wish I would have done that, you know? And so that's a failure in my mind. That's a mm-hmm. failure to make a good decision. And so it's going to happen. It's not when is it going to happen. It's going to happen. So I think the biggest thing is I always, when I fail at something or fail, I don't know if anything's like really, which way do you fall, right? Fall forward, fall backward. But I always go, okay, well, what did I learn? Because there's value in every single thing you do and you're always developing. So even in that failure, there was development. And so I had a business that failed 4 years ago. That's going to make me, you know, probably close to $60,000 this year. Wow. And so did I really fail 4 years ago? No, learned a whole lot.
You learned a lot, but it just wasn't the right season for that to sprout up.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
So, yeah, I don't know if I answered that or not.
No, you did. You did. That's perfect. Thank you so much. The last question, how much of do you think your success in, you know, building the multiple businesses that you have is out of just straight up luck, or how much of it was just hustle and work ethic?
I mean, there's definitely areas where I was lucky or blessed, you know, I mean, opportunities came to get, you know, equipment for cheaper and have friends that helped me do things and like really flatten that curve of learning. But I think a lot of it is just not giving up. It's a lot of mental things, you know, it's a lot of taking care of yourself, getting plenty of sleep, getting rest. And those are things I learned later that now I feel good. I'm okay if I take a day off. Like the reason why I own a business is because I want the freedom to take a day off. And so a lot of times we get in that 9-to-5 mentality. And then when we start our own business, we're like, oh man, I can't take any days off. I got to work 7 days a week. I got to feed my family. And really it's just like a mind game, like get up, be consistent, do what you have to do. And some days I work 2 hours and some days I work 10 hours. And so, you know, today's a 10-hour day. Yesterday was a 2-hour day. Yeah. And I made way more money yesterday than I'll make today. And so it's like, whatever, you know,
the 10 hours you put in today is going to pay benefits next week, Monday, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's like, I don't know. It is a grind. It is a hustle, but there's got to be peace in it. And if there's no peace in it, then it's probably not a good business, because I think your happiness matters more than money.
Yeah.
So
100%. Great advice. Thank you so much. Where can people find you if they want to reach out to you, if they want to get some shirts printed, if they just want to hear your fishing podcast, where can they reach you?
Everything's on, it's just my business name, Thorpe Creative. So it's just the handle at Thorpe Creative, and that's Thorpe Creative, one word. Anywhere, Twitter, LinkedIn, I think all those places, or Billy Thorpe. But if you look up Billy Thorpe, you're probably going to get this Australian rock star guy.
Yes, that's who I found when I Googled you. I was like, who the hell is this?
Yeah. So if you think you got marketing problems, I don't want to hear it.
So thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for your time today.